Good morning. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Thank you for tuning in this morning to share time and rhythm with us. Welcome to this dance space. Well, as you enter into the space, as always, friends, we invite you to come in as we explore the stories that live both on and beyond the stage. And today, our conversation will take us on a pathway which explores oral tradition, history, percussion, vocalization, reflection, and so much more. Coming up on the show, Brené Ali is in the house and will be with us for the full hour. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here to CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a short break and be right back with Brené Ali. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. My guest today, Brené Ali, was born and raised in Flint, Michigan, and is an interdisciplinary artist who believes in using the power of the arts to transform the human spirit. Among Brené's many roles, she is currently a lecturer at Johns Hopkins Peabody Conservatory, a member of the Baltimore Jazz Collective, the inaugural performing artist in residence at Baltimore's Creative Alliance, and cultural ambassador and artist in residence with Next Level USA and the U.S. Department of State Education and Cultural Affairs. Now, Brené is a National Dance Project Grant Chamber Music America New Jazz Works and Ruby Artist recipient and Art for Social Change Fellow through Johns Hopkins University's Inheritance Baltimore Billie Holiday Center for Liberation Arts for a work-in-progress archival performative process called the Baby Lawrence Legacy Project. Brené has served as the artistic director of Tapology, Inc., Fourth Wall Arts Salon, and Sound and Movement, LLC. She is the recipient of the Best Short Play Award at the Downtown Urban Theater Festival and the Vox Populi Independence Music Award. Her Broadway and off-Broadway experiences include Shuffle Along and Stomp. She was also a feature dancer in the TV film drama miniseries, Lady in the Lake. It is my great pleasure and an honor to welcome Brené Ali to Turnout Radio. Brené, how are you doing?
I'm good.
It is so great to see you. It's so great to just share space with you. How is today greeting Brené Ali?
Oh, with so much hope and excitement.
Well, I love the fact that you said hope. That word hope is one that resonates with me deeply. And so I love that you are sitting in hope today. And what a great way to begin, Brené, because in relation to that word hope, at the top of the segment, I made mention of the fact that you believe in using the power of the arts to transform the human spirit. Share with us, please, why that sentiment speaks to you.
Because I can only speak from my own personal experience, right? And then also from what I have physically experienced and then also witnessed, you know, I come from a family of artists, you know, my father being the source, you know, of what that looks like, and seeing how, you know, the arts from dance to music to theater to visual arts has been, you know, a tool that has literally picked my spirit up, you know, in times that were very dark. And also, you know, have witnessed a lot of people, young people, grown people, you know, in very difficult times and or just, you know, development, human development, transform, you know, miraculously through the arts. You know, whether it's, you know, spiritual, you know, development, economic development, you know, personal development, I've seen transformation, you know, arrive in people because they have chosen to use the arts just for that, to help them heal and to grow and build. And for me, to be an artist and to be truly connected to the arts, it is one of the most clear portals to the creator, you know? Like, it doesn't get any more direct to God than through the arts. So, you know, if I am seeking transformation, or if I am feeling bad, if I am feeling low, like I have the tools of the arts to help transform that feeling instantaneously.
Beautiful. And I consider just how much that understanding leads to a very significant pathway of healing. So I'm curious to know, is the human spirit then, Brené, at the forefront of your mind when you're creating and telling stories?
Absolutely. Just about always. I you know, I don't really know how to disconnect from that. That is the source that I'm able to draw from to, you know, to connect beyond the human body. You know, it's like you have your human, you have the body of the human, you have the spirit that lives inside of the human being, you know. And I don't know, like I've always been raised to be consciously aware, you know, and in tune with humanity for the greater good. And so there lies this understanding that I've, you know, been raised not just by my father, but by my community, you know, my teachers, but down to schooling. You know, I've been very fortunate, and I went to a public school, you know, but there was a community of people here in Flint, Michigan, who, you know, really, really believed in the transformation of the arts and what that can do for you. And so it's, I don't know any other way. I literally don't know any other way but to understand the significance of the human spirit when engaging in the arts.
I appreciate that so much. One of the things that comes to mind, Brené, is that I consider during the course of my life journey, how many times the arts has protected me, healed me, caused me to look within and to see parts of myself that I didn't know existed, and has really created this consciousness of understanding. Talking about that human spirit, I think is extremely special, because I do find that there is an opportunity to gain a deeper understanding of who we are.
Absolutely.
So in that light, then, as we take a look at who Brené is, have there been discoveries for you? Have there been personal discoveries for you about your approach to art making, or even just discoveries for you about who Brené is when you think about that mantra that we speak of?
Yeah, lots of discoveries, constantly in a state of self-discovery. It's funny that we're like interrogating my artist statement, right? And I remember when a friend of mine and I wrote it, I had just come back. It was like around 2005. I had just returned back from Germany, and I was probably like 22 years old. And I was really, really in like a seeking place, trying to figure out who I was. And that actually was the beginning of when I began to embrace who Brené Ali could be. I had made a decision that I was gonna not go back to college, that I wanted to be a full-time tap dancer. And an artist. And what did that mean to me? Because I know that I'm an interdisciplinary artist. I sing, I do all these things. I was in college for theater, but I didn't do anything connected to theater. I was tap dancing and studying and traveling with Savion and then coming back and forth to Flint and doing things with my father, but still asking the question, who am I? What do I want? And even though I was in Germany, working as a solo artist in a larger production, I was still trying to figure it out. And it took a lot of tears, a lot of, screams, a lot of crying, a lot of fasting. I kind of went on a whole journey and began to be more comfortable with myself authentically. And so I just feel like there's cycles of that, when you're shedding skin, every time you get new growth hair, you lose some to get new hair or, new skin or, things of that nature. So it's like, for me, it's just been like cycles where I'm constantly discovering who I am. And it definitely impacts the way how I practice. I mean, at that time in 2005, I was, alone in a foreign country, no friends, family around, didn't know anybody. And I did that. I was there for like 4 months speaking and, doing, and I practiced hours for hours. People called me an introvert because I was so like this. And of course I got on stage, I was out there, but then off stage, I just was like in my own world, in the seeking place. And so that kind of put me into another space by the time I came back to the United States. And I just continued that journey. And so so when I started to feel the transformation happening, like I knew that it was crucial for me to, make sure I always carve out space to practice my crafts. It's how I worship. It's literally the tool that I need for my own medicine. It's medicine. That was when it really, really, just became more than just like a soundbite or trigger words, or even this is what they say it's supposed to be for. So I'm just walking blind, and a blind faith of just, okay, just believing it. But then it became, then I became a witness. So, and bearing witness in that, it has been very crucial to my practice and in my personal human development. So in order for me to, shed, like I gotta shed, I have to shed. And even when I don't want to, and life happens, right? And so then there's things that has happened in life, but soon as it gets too chaotic, I know where my core is, and I go into a practice room, or I'll just sit quiet, and then a melody or a song will come, and okay, so I'll just like get a voice memo and get this rhythm out so I can not forget again and revisit that idea later. Or get a journal and just write, just free write. Like I have to do those things.
Yes, yes. And Brené, the shedding, even when you don't want to, resonates with me. Mm-hmm. Because how that lands for me is that I think about the fact that in those moments of shedding and kind of processing and pushing through is where I found that some of the deepest learning mm-hmm. occurs for us. Have you found that in the shedding, even when you don't want to?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are times where like, I'm just so exhausted, especially being a mom now, I don't get to practice as much as I want to. So then, and then it's like, well, the exhaustion and all the things kick in, and I will have to, okay, today I'm going to go to the studio. And even once I get there, I'm like, what am I going to do? And I just, it starts out really like nothing. Like, it's like, I'm not even doing much, but because I'm there and I'm in that space, I'm like, I'm here. So figure it out. And then, figure out what this is going to do for you. Do something. It's like I still have this voice say, you got to do something. And once I kind of just like let go, some like really, really great stuff comes out, and like that block is gone, and even if the block is there, I think that that's also a part of breaking the, trying to get to that breakthrough moment, is that you still showed up. And that's hard to acknowledge at times when you like, you have this plan and you show up and it didn't quite turn out the way you did, but you still did it. Like, that is progress, right? We're also trained, to like create something and like have this like result. Versus like you just go to practice for the sake of practicing. And I always, I have to find a balance at times where, where it's like, okay, I'm practicing because I know I got a show coming up and I don't want to feel ill prepared. But then when I get in the room, like, I don't even feel like doing this right now. But I have to do it because I need to. And it may not have been the best, practice session, but I still did it, and it did, and then like later, like you're like, okay, I'm glad I did it. It's the same kind of mindset that people have about going to the gym. You're on a mission, you're trying to lose this weight, or you're on a regimen and you go anyway even though you don't want to. The results, are the motivating factor, but at the same time, the result for me is really like the peace of mind that I feel afterwards, even though I'm like, I need to work on some stuff, but Like, I can breathe a little bit deeper now that it's over.
Stay with us. More of Turnout Radio coming up after this. I'd love to give a shout out to your family.
Yes.
You've mentioned your father.
Yes.
Yes. Your father has been a part of your inspiration, great inspiration. Tell us a little bit about your father.
Yes. So Alfred Bruce Bradley, you would have never told me I'm not like him in female form, and you still can't tell me that to this day. And I have two other sisters, you know, I have a brother. I believe I'm the one who's like him the most in so many ways, you know. I don't know if that's always like a good thing, but I, as a little girl, I wanted to do everything that he did. And it's funny because I have the same initials as him. And you know, he just was like a big inspiration for me, because he could sing, he was very sociable, he's a great teacher, he could draw, he was an actor, you know, he just like had that thing to him that, you know, I was a sponge. So my, like, a good amount of my journey has been almost like in parallel, you know, whether it's here in Flint, Michigan, where I am now currently, you know, or when I moved to New York, or when I moved to Philadelphia, and now I do live in Baltimore, I'm doing the exact same thing that he basically raised me to do willingly. You know, sometimes it's tricky when you have artist family, you know, because it can become very competitive. It can become, you know, a lot of, it can just be very chaotic. And that, you know, it gets chaotic in our house at times, you know, but not in the sense of, not in a negative way, you know, it's just busyness and, you know, and always fun times most of the time, you know, but we like everybody else, family got issues, but my father, you know, he actually learned how to tap dance later in life. He was already doing theater, and his first tap lesson was in Toronto when he was doing One More Time. And I did find out, I think One More Time, when he was in Toronto, played at the Village Gate Theater. But that was one of the places where, you know, he spent time. And I was probably like, one or two years old then. So I did have like a trip to Canada as a baby, but you know, I don't remember any of that. So it's like seeing him do that, and then he went on to New York and he was working off Broadway, you know, and we got to go visit and see. And like I was just like that inner, that spirit, like it came at me at the early age of five. I was like, this is it. Like I knew at the age of 5 years old that this was the path that I was going to be taking. And my sisters both same thing. Francis Bradley, she's a tap dancer and a visual artist as well. My older sister Cherie, she actually, we're 12 years apart, so she was tap dancing, but she was also into singing and acting and all of that. And she didn't tap dance as much, but she still can. She just really took her journey on a musical journey and you know, doing that work. But we're all extensions of him in that regard. And we love that about our foundation. And you know, it has been the very thing that has sustained us, you know, because we have a lot of love and unconditional love flowing through our family, which feeds us, which, you know, gives us the confidence to be the type of artist that I am. You know, you grow up learning the arts, and then you see, in, you know, the arts in spaces on a mainstream level. And don't think I didn't want to, you know, be on TV and didn't want to do that life, you know, going to mainstream music and all of that. At one point, I felt like that was like what you think success is. But, you know, he has shown us, it's shown me in particular, you know, you can create your own path and be successful. You get to measure what success looks like for you. And I really didn't start to fully understand that until I became an adult, like around 2020 to 2005, you know what I'm saying? In my early 20s was when it started to really become clear. So yeah, like he instills so much, you know, to be conscious of your community and how that ties into, you know, how the arts tie into community, your spirituality, how you relate to people, the human connection, you know, what are you doing? Understanding this idea of grassroots building, boots to the ground, you know, not just, and it's still, like, if you're excellent at what you do and you take it seriously, his model, and I have adapted it, is you take care of the art will take care of you.
I really appreciate that, among many things that your father has taught you, to really consider that inquisition of what it means to be within community, and also to think about what your art making looks like, how it's being presented, how it's being shared, disseminated.
Yeah. I was confused for a while. Like, I don't know what to do. But and the big part of it was that I stayed connected to my hometown because he had created a whole tap dance organization called Tapology. Yes. And even at the early age of 18, I think I was 18 and 19, I was freshman in college, was when Tapology kind of was birthed. But that's like an extension of what he was doing with my late mentor, Sheila Miller Graham. You know, they were business partners. And so I grew up in a dance studio called Creative Expression Dance Studio. And Sheila, her dance training stopped in college, but, you know, she was very spiritual. She was very much into church and she was involved in the community. She was an educator. And also, like, both of them are, you know, Greek. So my dad, you know, is part of fraternity, she's part of sorority. So like, just like these traditions, Black traditions, Black culture taking care of your community, being involved, you know, like we were out here fundraising, you know, coming together, sharing our resources. I share my daddy with the city of Flint. Like, yeah, I have 3 siblings by blood, but I have like a whole community of brothers and sisters that he literally was taking care of. It was never just go to dance class, learn dance steps. It was go pick this kid up. We, you know, we riding around in that always kept like these vans that were like raggedy and no seats inside because he also would paint houses to, you know, to make extra money. But like we got to where we needed to go, you know, the heat wasn't working. So we had blankets in there, you know? And so it was just like this, make it do with what you got, you know, taking nothing and turning it into something has always been, you know, like what I know, you know? So in hindsight, and even in today, like I'm grateful for that. You know, it has really helped to put a lot of things in perspective and also bring about a means of survival that, you know, I didn't see it as that then. You know, I was a kid, you know, and I was happy. I was amongst community. I was with my family. I was dancing. Like, that's all that mattered.
Wonderful. A shout out to your father and the making mention of survival. When I think about the generations prior to us, when I think about our ancestors, the word survival, from what I've come to understand from my aunties, from the uncles, from my parents, is that it meant something very different for them than it does for us now.
Yeah, I mean, the word that keeps coming to me is sacrifice. Like, I didn't understand the level of sacrifice that he was doing, you know, and my mother, even though my mother's not an artist, you know, like the type, the level of sacrifice that is required, like sacrifice to me is like, it's a requirement in order to thrive. Like there's a, like you want to survive. Surviving is one thing, but you can, like, you don't want to stay in survivor mode all the time, right? But in order to thrive, you have to sacrifice something. You have to give up something. You have to die. It's like, what is it, to die daily? I die daily. Like there's a part of you that has to die. That's the shedding. That's the letting go. Now that I'm in my 40s, like I'm really understanding that as a mother. Over time, I really began to see that, which is why it was nothing. It had never been, it was nothing for me to be here, to show up, to sacrifice some things of myself to be in support of my dad's vision. But over time, I had to go, well, you getting older, what's your vision? That's where I'm at now, you know, whereas what is your vision? Who are you? What is the level of sacrifice that you're willing to take for your family? Now, whether my kids decide to take this journey or not, like, I'm okay with them not wanting to go in the path of me. But at the same time, like, what is my sacrifice to thrive, you know? And God bless my father, you know, and I give grace, so much thanks, because it's been like a crazy, it's been craziness lately with his health. But that's the reality. That's the cycle of life. And I'm, you know, very, very blessed to receive what he is putting down even right now, you know, as he is trying to heal and recover, that it is for real, my time to rise up and figure out what, and not just figure out, but do it. You know what I mean? And that's the hope that I'm sitting in. When you were talking about earlier, I'm sitting full of hope right now, because like for me, from hope opens the door to possibility. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah.
Amen. You just took me to church. Well, blessings and love to your father and to all those who have just planted those seeds that you speak of. I'm wondering, You know, as you talk about the sacrifice and all that you've learned, how has that now parlayed into how you share art and engage in art practices with your children?
Well, when I think about the sacrifice, I like when I made a choice to become a mother, like there's a level of sacrifice that came about, just it also fear, like what is that gonna look like for my career? Because as a woman, you know, who uses her body and then to be bringing in another person in this world, you're the source that your children depend on, you know, for everything. So now there becomes this part of you that you have to let go of. It's a hard pill to swallow at first, because you can't just jump up and move and do what you want to do. Now, when I had my first child, it was wild because I did not intend on having a child, but I also didn't want to miss the opportunity that I felt that God was presenting to me. It was like a calling that came onto me that I have to do this. And I was afraid. And, you know, I had the choice to not follow through and would have been okay, maybe, you know, but that was not something that I was willing to explore. And so I was willing to sacrifice this idea of what being a successful artist was in order to become a mother and still stay connected to my true self, which is an artist regardless, you know. And then it was like 6 months later, God continued to test me by bringing along such a traumatic experience for my daughter at 6 months of age. You know, she almost died from a brain injury. And I was like, what are we doing? You know, and then it became even more about you gotta keep sacrificing. And then having to also go deeper and lean into what resources and family and foundation. Like I felt like I was always being pulled back to my core, which was my family, who then, you know, supported me. And I was able to go off and do stuff like work off Broadway, do Stomp. Like, oh, that's great. It provided me the opportunity to make money to sustain us. But being on the road and touring, when you have a child that's growing up, and I was a single mom, you know what I'm saying? You know, then that came to me, like, you're not going to be able to do this forever. So if you care about your child, what is the next step? And so I came off the road. I'm letting this go, you know, because there were other things that were going on that I didn't really like. And I was just not willing to continue down that path like this. So I came off the road. I came right back. This one, I moved back to Flint and just stayed here for a little bit. But again, having this foundation of family still allowed me to be the flexible person that I was, that I am. You know, and then opportunity, God came and gave you another opportunity. Oh, you can go to Broadway. But now I have to let go of being here in Flint. It's time to move on. I still stay connected, but then I left and then moved to New York, did shuffle along. And I think what also was inspiring is my daughter loved to see me in my full self. And that was one of the things that I would hear from, like, I started talking to other women who were artists. How do y'all do this? How do you be mommies and artists at the same time? And they're like, you have to be your whole self. Your children need to see you being your full self. If you are not being who you are, your children will not reap the benefits of who you are. If you're doing this, you know, if you're belittling who you are and not being your full self, they will not know how to do that for themselves. That just became like a whole journey and quest, you know what I'm saying, for me, over time. And then eventually I met my husband, who my oldest was calling dad before we even started dating. Like she knew, like she just knew, like he's the one that you're gonna be married to, and he's gonna be my dad. And she always wanted to have a family, a sibling. I married another musician, artist person who was a lot like my father, Sean Jones, trumpet player. We were trying to figure things out, but I always had the support to be who I needed to be. And it's important for my, it's important for children to see that. Like, I love watching my dad be who he is. Even when he was away working, my dad was working all the time. Only time I saw my daddy was if was in dance class most of the time, or in the morning before I went to school. And so, I would miss him. He missed a lot of like performances and high school things, but he was he was still steady in the house. And so I understood that early, and I wanted to, I want to be able to offer that to my children. They are watching us, and I'm not trying to hinder them from being themselves. So it's so beautiful, and I'm very grateful. And that is how, for me, sacrifice has played a major role in into where I am today, especially as a mother and as an artist.
You're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. And such a pleasure to be in conversation. But as we start to venture towards the close of our hour, we must talk about the Dance Immersion Legacy Summit. This is an event that's running from August 6th straight through to the 9th. And it's a summit which explores African roots, musical roots, future branches in African American cultures. And Brené, you will be one of the facilitators for this professional development conference, performance event, and more. And so let's talk about the summit, please. I'm so excited about this. I plan on being there, of course, during the full run of the event. I'd like to start with some of the points that your session in particular will be exploring about body percussion and vocalization in street dances. Talk to us, please.
I mean, so when Tamia reached out to me, about, this whole vision, and, it's like, okay, well, thinking about the community, and it's like, well, I could do tap, but I don't think that that's going to be the bulk of the people that are going to show up. But also, looking at the many things that I have to offer, what's another approach? And so, it's like, a lot of my creative practice, even before I get into the shoe, a lot of times will start with, like I said, just a melody, and singing out that melody. And while I'm doing it, I have to pack, keep some type of time, or find a way to use my voice to kind of utter what I'm thinking, instrumentation wise, if I hit a certain part of my body or snap my finger or stop my foot, like it is creating the textures that I am envisioning that makes it. Yeah, and that may be just where it lives and stay there, but it also opens up so much more possibility on what it can become if I continue to develop it. So, for me, using my body and my voice is very, very crucial to my art making practice. So I mean, I don't really have like a specific regimen, you know, but I want to be able to explore, like, you know, groove. I want to be able to also invite people to embrace, you know, the and this might be the thing that we build on, is that African principle: if you can talk, you can sing; if you can walk, you can dance. You know, knowing that the history on how we've been able to communicate and amongst each other, also as a way to find liberation. You know, I want to be able to bring that into the space. So like, if we are just sitting in a pocket of a groove and people being able to just find ways to use their body and their voice to connect and express, what does that look like? What does that even feel like? You know, to be in a space of just using your raw tools of you as an instrument. It's, you know, it can be a scary thing. And so I want to be able to facilitate, you know, the space for people to explore that, you know, and really emphasize like the judgment-free space, and you will be surprised at what you actually have that is already within you, within your own voice, within your own body, to not have to use somebody else's body or voice, you know, and it's not about perfect pitch or none of that, you know what I'm saying? It really is about using sound and movement to build something. And I don't know how often people have opportunities to create or just have that as a tool for themselves, as a part of their practice, you know, and I think that it's actually cool to be able to listen to what you have to offer and finding different textures on your body, in your voice, using your breath, you know, yes, the breath work that it takes to even create that, and just letting that be the focus. That's kind of what I am envisioning, you know, the class will look like. We'll see. We shall see.
Well, it is so exciting, and I can't wait, truly, I can't wait for you to touch down in Toronto with all of the other wonderful facilitators that will be there as well. It's going to be an awesome week. Exciting, exciting. Well, I will be there with shoes, a notebook, and a spirit of love. Yeah.
And I'll be there. Of love. That's right.
I will be there with that. Yes. Brené, you are such a joy. You truly are, and a blessing. I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show today and for sharing so beautifully with our audience. Thank you for being here. And thank you in advance for what you're about to bring to Toronto. We're looking so forward to welcoming you here. Thanks again for joining me today on the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Today, you've been listening to the sounds of Cannonball Adderley with Autumn Leaves and John Coltrane with Blue Train. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. That was Brené Ali sitting behind the mic with me today. What a pleasure to have her on this morning's show. Now, folks, if you missed the top of today's episode, we invite you to visit turnoutradio.com and some of your favorite podcast platforms where this interview is now streaming. And you can catch Brené at the Dance Immersion Legacy Summit, which runs August 6th straight through to the 9th, 2025, at the Winchester Street Theatre in Toronto. Brené will be among an outstanding list of lead facilitators at the event. It then comes to a close with a celebration on the night of August 9th with an evening of performance experimentations, a choreographic concert with faculty and special guests, which will be live and also live streamed. To purchase tickets and to access a full list of the faculty and the special guests, visit danceimmersion.ca. Many thanks to Tamia Wharton Surrey, curator and executive director, and the fabulous Dance Immersion staff and team. This brings us to a close of today's episode. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us. Coming up after our close, stay tuned for music from Kobena Aqua Harrison, who is one of the faculty members of the summit, with a song entitled Dark Majesty, followed by Oscar Peterson and Sea Jam Blues. Join us again next week for more of Turnout Radio right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance.